Alrighty, rock and roll in hour number two of our radio program. That's right, it is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. I will get to three college football takes from over the weekend in just a bit. But I'm really surprised by one thing so far. After the San Francisco 49ers go down yesterday, for the last few weeks, I have taken a phone call from Ryan in Santa Barbara. And he has called, and he has called me all the names in the book for not admitting that the 49ers are the best team in football. And we're now 60 minutes into the show, and I don't know where Ryan is. He hasn't called at 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. And it's kind of like the Eagles and the 49ers are now that Spider-Man gif that we always see on social media, and that meme too, because whatever the 49ers do this year, the Eagles do. And whatever the Eagles do, the 49ers do. And that was kind of made evident through the first few weeks of the season when they were both undefeated. And yesterday, the 49ers lose. And I'm not going to lie, I was sitting back saying, it's going to be nice not to hear from those 49ers fans this week that always love to tell me when their team's doing well, but then we don't hear from them when their team's doing poorly. And I'm like, okay, Philadelphia, even though I'm not an Eagles fan, but you're going up against the Jets. The Jets don't have DJ Reed, the Jets don't have Sauce Gardner. That should be an easy peasy win. And then Jalen Hurts decided to make an ill-advised throw in the final minute plus of the game, gets a good return. Eagles allow the Jets to score, which was the right decision. And the next thing you know, Jalen Hurts couldn't get the job done. So 49ers and Eagles, when they both win, right? We get into that debate. Eagles, 49ers, what's the case? Now both lose. Don't hear from many 49ers nor Eagles fans today. They're still two of the best teams in football. But yes, the Detroit Lions are now emerged into that conversation as that next team in the NFC. And the Lions can make a big run at this at 5-1. And they have a good schedule that does work in favor of the Lions the rest of the way with a lot of bad teams in front of them. Okay, let's do this. I want to get to three college football takes. The game of the year so far in college football. And I know some people could say, oh, it was Red River with Texas and Oklahoma. I thought Washington and Oregon with two top 10 teams lived up to the hype and then some. That was a phenomenal football game. And I said this to Emmett Smith where we were talking about Dan Campbell. And I'm like, Dan Campbell's a psycho. And he's like, what do you mean a psycho? And I'm like, I mean that in a good way. Like, I want my football coach to be a psycho. Dan Lanning, he goes to this different level when he's on the sideline, where he just looks like a madman. And he looks like he's unhinged. And he just gets, and you kind of saw that in the pregame speech against Colorado a few weeks ago, when he's going up against Coach Prime. He's like, oh, they play for clicks. He goes, use your helmet. Talk with your helmet. And he's like pointing to his head. And I thought that was such an electric speech. And it was awesome. And it was stupid to me how he got any pushback and blowback for that speech. But in the game against Washington, he was super aggressive, and you could tell he fed off of being aggressive. And I've been critical of some coaches that I think are too aggressive, like Brandon Staley, but all the decisions that Dan Lanning made, I didn't have a problem with. And during the game, even the one late when he goes for it, he was coaching that way the entire game. And if your kicker just made the kick at the end of the game, we're going to overtime. And who knows how that would have ended between Washington and Oregon. But that was a phenomenal, and I mean a phenomenal, football game. And I had no problem with Lanning going for it. And not only that, I saw a lot of people when Michael Penix Jr., who, oh my God, that dude was banged up. That dude has had a history of injuries going back to Indiana. And there was a moment where I said, oh, it just stinks. Where it's his game, it's his time to shine, and now he's getting hurt and it's going to derail this game. But he just kept on stepping up and making big play after big play, and right now, he is by far and away the leader of the Heisman Trophy, where we'll get to Caleb Williams in a second, but he took a massive step back this past weekend. Drake May is going to start to jump into that conversation. Jordan Travis at Florida State is in that conversation. You have a few guys as well. Bo Nix, because he just lost to Michael Penix. Now he takes a few steps back. Dylan Gabriel, they're probably going to be undefeated. Oklahoma going into that Big 12 championship. So he's in the conversation. Don't sleep on J.J. McCarthy. I told you that in week one, especially if Michigan runs the table. J.J. McCarthy, with how many weapons they have, the quarterback usually does get to shine. And now Brock Bowers is going to be out minimum 4 to 6 weeks from the surgery. So if it was one non-quarterback to win the Heisman Trophy this year, a lot of people looked at Brock Bowers at Georgia, and now he's going to be out of the mix. But Michael Penix Jr. had a Heisman moment, and there were some people when I was looking at social media where he scored in those two plays and then Oregon gets the ball back. They're like, oh, he scored too quickly. I don't want to hear about scoring too quickly, because earlier in the game, you know, shortly right before that, they got down to the one-yard line, Washington, and they couldn't get the ball in the end zone. So you don't want to get yourself in a position where you get too cute and you're trying to decide how and when you're going to score, and then you end up fumbling it and something going wrong. So I had no problem with the aggressive nature of Kalen DeBoer and Michael Penix, and I had no problem with the aggressive nature of Dan Lanning and that Oregon football team. I just thought, as someone that didn't have a dog in the fight, you know, I like Dan Lanning at Oregon. I'm a big fan of Kalen DeBoer, and that guy only has two losses ever since going to Washington a year ago, and both those losses were under 8 points. And that team, they were my pick, Washington, before the year to win the Pac-12. I'm sticking with them now. I know their schedule's brutal, and the Pac-12 is going to beat up against one another. But that was just such a fun football game where it was explosive offense. It was a great atmosphere. It's the final year of the Pac-12, and you just had two heavyweights inside the top 10 just going at it, and it kind of stinks that we didn't get to see overtime. And it's a shame that a kicker – and you always say you can't trust college kickers – just couldn't hit that kick to get us to overtime. Do we have the audio of I think this is on the Washington Huskies radio network. This is how it sounded when the Oregon kicker missed the chip shot.
This from 42. Good snap. Good hold. Kick is on the way. Kick is up. End over end kick. Yeah! He's thrown. Good. He missed it. He missed it wide right. He missed it wide.
And a classic indeed. So I can't praise enough the Washington program, but really that was the game of the year for me so far through the first 6, 7, 8 weeks of the college football season. And Michael Penix Jr. right now is the top dog for the Heisman Trophy. Next college football take. USC losing to Notre Dame. Not surprising, but it's the way that USC lost to Notre Dame. All year long, I said that USC was not going to find a way to get to the college football playoff. They were not going to find a way to win the Pac-12 championship, because I thought it was a gross miscalculation and too much loyalty that the head coach of USC with the Trojans, Lincoln Riley, had to his defensive coordinator, Alex Grinch. And that defense for USC, you knew, and you already saw signs of it in games that they won, was not going to be able to step up and deliver when you got into a high-octane offensive shootout, right? Like, if USC was going to lose, I thought they would have lost 41-38. And I know they allowed a lot of points, but I didn't walk away saying, oh, the USC defense in that game was the reason why they lost. They lost, and what made it jarring was the best player in college football, the guy that is assumed to be the number one overall pick in the draft, and you have teams tanking for him. In the biggest game to the moment so far for USC this year, he failed. And it was stunning. Now, great players play bad games. But usually when a great player plays a bad game, it's ugly and they find a way to pull it out. But those mistakes just ended USC having any chance in the game. With the three interceptions, and also, he didn't even clear 200 yards passing. He was at 199, but he was close. But I would have never thought the reason why USC was going to go down, and the number one reason why USC did go down, was because the quarterback came up small on such a big stage. And Notre Dame, they're a funky team to figure out. They really are. Because I thought Notre Dame was going to beat Ohio State. And Notre Dame should have beat Ohio State. And if you're an Irish fan, like, yeah, you're thrilled that you beat USC, but it's impossible to not look back and say what could have been for this season. Because you should have defeated Ohio State. You didn't take advantage in the first half. Then towards the end of the game, you dropped an interception. You also had only 10 guys on the field on the final touchdown as the clock hit zero. Then the next week, you had to grind it out against Duke in a game that they probably should have lost, but they won. The following week, you lose by 13 or 12, whatever it was, to Louisville. And now you bounce back against USC, and you don't only beat them, you ran them off the field in South Bend. So, Stu, I know you're a Notre Dame fan. You got to be thrilled with beating USC because of the rivalry, and it's always great to beat USC. But when you have that euphoria kind of settle down after the game of, wow, not only did we beat USC, but we kicked the living snot out of them, you got to look back and say, if they would have just won one of those games that they lost, it would be a different tone today about what the Irish could accomplish for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's what could have been. And the Ohio State game, yeah, it feels like they beat themselves. The Duke game, like you said, was sloppy. They should have, could have lost. And then to lose to Louisville, who got smoked by Pittsburgh this weekend, it just doesn't make any sense. And then they smoke US. It's just typical Notre Dame, I would say.
And in a 12-team format, you'll get teams in that have two losses. But in a four-team format, we've never seen a team get into the college football playoff with two losses. So I think because Notre Dame is graded on a different scale now because of what happened in the last decade or so, where they would have the record, the brand, they would get into the big game, and then they just wouldn't show up, whether that was the championship game against Alabama when it was just two teams getting in, and then the two times that they did get it into the college football playoff with it being a four-team. So I do still believe that Notre Dame probably would have had to be undefeated to get into the college football playoff. But as we saw last year, there were some teams that didn't win their conference championship, and Notre Dame's not in a conference. And like at the end of the year, they just all kept on stumbling on one another. So if enough teams stumbled and you had one loss, and let's say that one loss was that bizarre one to Louisville, and let's say you beat Ohio State, you go on to beat Clemson in a few weeks, and you beat USC, it could have been tough to keep Notre Dame out of the college football playoff, depending on how this shapes out. Like, it's tough to say one loss Notre Dame now, and I know they have two losses, would have got in, just because the Big Ten, you have those three teams humming, and we're going to get to see Ohio State, Penn State this weekend, noon kick. In the ACC, it looks like we're on a collision course to Florida State and also UNC. In the Big 12, Oklahoma's the lead dog, but don't be surprised if Texas gets their revenge in the Big 12 championship game. And, you know, it looks like it's either Georgia or bust in the SEC. And then when you go to the Pac-12, right now I would lean Washington. I leaned them before the start of the season. But those teams, they always beat up on one another inside of the Pac-12. So it's crowded right now. In a few weeks, though, it will be less crowded. And it happens each and every year. So, yes, great win for Notre Dame. It was a game that Marcus Freeman needed, and it was a dominant victory in year number two. But it's impossible to not also acknowledge it the other way and say, man, if they would have just found a way to split either Ohio State or Louisville, and probably the one that annoys you more is the Ohio State one, because you had that game won, the Louisville game, you just didn't show up. And then finally, I've given this take before, and I will give it again. If you need more proof that Jimbo Fisher should be fired, and Jimbo Fisher is the most overrated coach in the country, I don't know what more proof you need than the last 2 weeks. Right? Week two, they didn't show up in the second half against Miami. With all the talent that they have, they posted, what, a 5-7 record last year with all that talent, top recruiting class, and going into this year, we're sitting in mid-October and they already have three losses. And in back-to-back weeks, you go up against a vulnerable Alabama team where your coach got soft. After going up 17-10, then it's 17-17. He doesn't go for it on 4th-and-1. And Jimbo Fisher, after the game, has the audacity to say, oh, well, if it was 4th-and-inches, I would have gone for it, but not go for it on 4th-and-1, which is like the dumbest quote I've ever heard. Like, there are some dumb quotes that we've heard from coaches and some arrogant coaches. I don't know if there's a dumber quote than what Jimbo Fisher delivered a week ago. And then you follow it up against Tennessee, which is not like this juggernaut Tennessee team. And it's a low-scoring game, and you can't find the way to get the job done, and you lose 20-13. I know that you're without Connor Wigman. He's done for the season. But it's not as if Johnson is a bad quarterback. He had that one good year at LSU, even though the team stunk. So I look at Jimbo Fisher. You have all this talent, but you can't win games. So is it the only reason he still has a job is because of the $70 million buyout. But if you're a fan of A&M, that passionate fan base, you got to be demanding, you got to be imploring the boosters to pay that $70 million and buy him out at the end of the year. Because the last 2 years, he's had really good rosters, and he's had really bad results. So those are my three college football takes from the weekend. Washington, Oregon, best game of the season. Penix moves into the lead spot for the Heisman Trophy. Jimbo Fisher must go, and USC goes down. I didn't think they were going to go down that way in the style, but their season is now on life support, and there's no doubt about it, they're going to lose again. Because if they lost and it wasn't because of their defense being reason one, that will eventually be reason one why they will drop another game or two moving on for the rest of the season. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Right on cue. All right, you call him out and he pops up, so I respect that. Ryan in Santa Barbara, I thought he was going to avoid me today after his 49ers didn't go down. What?
Zach.
You know what, Ryan? There's a famous question on social media.
Come on, Zach.
What happened?
No,
what happened?
Bottom line, don't talk. Don't talk. I will pay for your flight to Santa Barbara from New York City and give you a wine tour, you and your wife or girlfriend,
okay,
and your son and daughters. I guarantee the Niners will win the Super Bowl. And wait, what? Your mumbler at who did they lose to? The Jets? Oh my God, it's so pathetic.
Wait, my mumbler? What do you mean?
I will fire.
You know I'm not an Eagles fan, right?
I will fire my kicker.
You know I'm not an Eagles fan, right?
What?
You know I'm not an Eagles fan, right?
No, I know you're not. You're a mumbler fan.
Oh, the Patriots. Oh, the mumbler. Yeah, they've won 6 Super Bowls, so don't be taking shots at them.
Yeah, good luck. They're not winning anything, and I think they're just trying to.
Well, Ryan, how old are you? Just wondering. How old are you?
I am. You know what? I'm about to turn 50 on December. In December.
Well, happy birthday! But it's been a long time since you've won. What the heck do you know about winning? Your team comes close every year and they drop the ball. So don't tell me about you know about winning. You don't know jack about winning.
Wait! So are you telling me that the Niners threw that game, or they should have won that game if it wasn't for that kook kicker?
I don't want to hear about what should have happened. You didn't win the game. I'm going to sound like a college football coach now. I don't deal in hypotheticals. I deal in reality. You let the Browns hang around too long, and you lost. You lost. And your great quarterback, hold on, your great quarterback, Brock Purdy, doesn't look like an MVP when Debo and McCaffrey are out, right?
Right.
You want to retract the MVP statement from a week ago?
Okay.
So you still think the Niners are winning the Super Bowl?
Yes. Who do you have? Come on. Bring it.
Who do I have winning the Super Bowl? Until someone knocks them down, I'll still go Kansas City. I will still take Kansas City because we said the same thing last year. We said the same thing last year. They're vulnerable, and guess what? They got the job done. And you know what? I'll still trust the Eagles more in a big game than I will the 49ers.
All right, well.
And you know who's coming? You know who's coming, Ryan?
What? Yeah, tell me.
We're biting off kneecaps soon. Dan Campbell and those 5-1 Lions. I love them. And they got an easy-peasy schedule the rest of the way. You may have to go to Detroit. For an NFC title game. How do you like them apples?
You're out of your mind.
Harbaugh and Schwartz will get them in midfield shaking hands again before the game, running after one another.
Me. I'm coming after you, Zach. That is it.
Ryan, you want to be me. You'll never be me. I can outscream you any day of the week. Get off my show. Enough with Ryan in Santa Barbara. At least he popped up. You know who Ryan's starting to sound like? Starting to sound like a Cowboy fan. He's moving into cockroach territory, that Ryan in Santa Barbara. It's a good phone call. Now, also, that's not a good bet for me, Santer. Because if God forbid, well, it's not unlikely that the Niners don't win the Super Bowl. I have to go drink wine with Ryan? Ah, there's no way I'm doing that.
Well, first of all, you're getting a free vineyard tour and free delicious homemade vineyard wine right there. So, like, it's not about hanging out with Ryan.
Is
he
trustworthy, though, to find the right places?
He has his own winery. He does his own thing. So you don't have to find places. You just drink his wine.
I don't know. I don't want to drink his tears in a few weeks. That would be nice. And this is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll come on back. We'll update you some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We call that segment the News Brief.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
A lot of wacky results yesterday in the NFL. You saw the Eagles lose to the Jets, stunning. You thought Ryan and Santa Barbara's 49ers would beat Cleveland, especially without Deshaun Watson, and the 49ers go down. And it looked like the Giants were about to go into Orchard Park without Daniel Jones, and they were going to find a way to steal a game from the Buffalo Bills. You could go back to the end of the first half where the Giants, bare minimum, should have got a field goal. Instead, they run the ball, and you have the Buffalo Bills pile up and huddle up on the Giants, and then the play runs out, and you walked into halftime with no points from that drive, and Brian Daboll was heated with Tyrod Taylor walking off the field. Here's Brian Daboll after the game on the run play to end the first half.
Had a play called, it was a run action pass play, and ended up alerting it to a run. Didn't get it off.
So I just don't get it. I know why Brian Daboll is upset, but does Tyrod Taylor just have the freedom? Tyrod Taylor? To change that play to a run? If so, that's a problem. Like, if he just did it on his own, oh, we're going to run, and you called the pass play, then that's on him, and that's stupid. But if he had the ability to do that, it's like, how don't you make sure that you're throwing the ball in that spot to make sure that you preserve some of the clock so you can still get a field goal if you don't get the ball in the end zone? Here is Darren Waller at the end of the game. They got one penalty. Right, it was incomplete. You think, okay, the game's over, and I had the Bills in Survivor, so I was sweating this one out, especially with earlier in the day, the Eagles going down, the 49ers going down. I see a lot of people, a lot of dominoes that were falling yesterday, and I'm sitting there nice and pretty in that Sunday night game going, okay, you know, this is going to be a nice little easy Sunday night football game. Bills will crush the Giants, and then you had to sweat that one out, and after the first penalty, they then throw the ball to Darren Waller, and Darren Waller was mugged again, but the rest did not call it. And here is Darren Waller on if there was a penalty on the final play.
There was contact, but I'm not somebody that's going to get into what a call should have been or how to tell officials how to do their job, because there's a way for me to make that play there, and it wasn't made. So that's what I focus on.
So, Samter, what I'm about to say is going to sound stupid, but I also think it's logical. What a way to preface that, if that makes any sense. Since they got the penalty on the play prior, I didn't think they were going to get the penalty again. I didn't think you were going to see back-to-back flags thrown there. Should there have been another flag thrown? Yes. But when watching the replay again, because at first everyone's like, oh, he was mugged, throw the flag. When I watch it again, I go, it needed to be more egregious for the flag to be thrown again. Like, that shouldn't be the way that the game is officiated. But I just kind of try to interpret the way I expect the game to be officiated.
No, I don't disagree with you at all. I think if it's like so egregious that you can't not throw the flag, that's one thing. But when you're talking about kind of questionable things, you can't do it twice in a row. Like, make the play or don't make the play.
And also, if they would have got the field goal before the end of the half, you would have needed to have thrown the football there on the final play, because you would have kicked a field goal and you would have won the game. Because that would have been 14-12. I know you can't play it that way, but that's the way that I play it. And it would have been 14-12. You just kick the field goal and you end up winning 15-14. What was bizarre to me, Saquon Barkley is your best offensive player. You don't run a pitch to Saquon there. You don't run the ball with Saquon there. Saquon can't get you 1 yard there on the goal line, which is ironic because we were all crushing the Giants at the end of the first half for running the football. But just needing 1 yard with the game on the line, I would have gone with Saquon Barkley. Here is Robert Saleh No Sauce Gardner, no DJ Reed. You're going up against the defending NFC champs in the Philadelphia Eagles, and you had four turnovers. Here is Robert Saleh with high praise for his defense.
Thought defense, per the usual, outstanding. You know, through these first 6 weeks, we've played a gauntlet of quarterbacks. I know we haven't gotten all wins, but we've embarrassed all of them.
How about that? We haven't gotten all wins, but we've embarrassed all of them. Robert Saleh is really feeling himself in the media the last few weeks, because I think he needs to kind of feed into that New York fan base, because there had to be some fear that he wouldn't be back if the Jets had a down year, even with the Rodgers injury, and they would have got rid of him. But now with Robert Saleh having this team at 3-3 and having a chance to go be a playoff team once again, I don't think it hurts to be a little cocky here and kind of just feed into that Jet fan base that's looking for some optimism with Aaron Rodgers on the sidelines right now. Here is Trevor Lawrence, who got banged up. We'll see if he'll be able to return Thursday, short week on Thursday Night Football against the Saints. But Trevor Lawrence discusses the Jaguars' win over the Indianapolis Colts.
This is where we want to be. You know, we're getting better every week. I think that's the most exciting thing, is we're getting better every week. We're getting closer. I feel like the momentum and the energy is really rolling for us, and we got to keep that going every week.
So I still don't know what the ceiling is for the Jaguars, and the injury is not supposed to be serious. It's going to be day-to-day. We'll see if he can give it a go on Thursday. And what I mean by the ceiling is I don't know how great the Jaguars could be, but the Jaguars showed you yesterday, and the Colts, by the way, they have not won a game in Jacksonville since 2014. But you see that people are starting to get optimistic about the Colts, even with Anthony Richardson potentially being done for the year, and the Jaguars just show inside the AFC South, even though they lost to the Texans by 20 points this year, that this is still their division. Like, you'll drop a game in division, but with people starting to talk up the Colts a little bit, Jacksonville said, yeah, not so fast. You're not really a contender inside this AFC South. Here is Zach Taylor on getting back to 500 as the Cincinnati Bengals did grind out a victory against the Seattle Seahawks, and their defense came up big.
We kind of stubbed our toe, you know, starting this race off, and we're going to continue to pick up steam. And again, there's days where our defense is going to lead the charge and lead us to victory. There's times where the offense is going to reciprocate that. There's times special teams can take over. And I think good teams just find ways to do it. And right now we're at that 3-3 mark, going into a bye, get a chance to get healthy, and then hit the surge after the bye starting with San Francisco.
And on Eye on Football yesterday, we played the Joe Burrow press conference. You would have thought they would have lost the game by 30 points because that offense was so inefficient in the second half. And he sounded as if he was at a funeral and it was like the worst day of his life, the quarterback of the Bengals. But with all those injuries and all those problems start the year, to be 3-3 going into the bye, you get healthy now. And then coming out of the bye, you just got to split against the 49ers and Bills. And then it's a brand new season for the Cincinnati Bengals. Rex Ryan, who it would not surprise me if he is the defensive coordinator soon to the Denver Broncos. He wanted that job before the season. I heard Pat McAfee was talking about that earlier today. Rex Ryan, we know he always enjoys when the Patriots stink. And he enjoyed just crushing the Patriots today on Get Up.
All things considered, what is your number one takeaway from
this team? Sucks. Like, that's my, I'm telling you, they stink. They absolutely stink. Where's the fight? Where's the energy? Where's the passion?
Yeah.
Like, I don't see it, dude.
Well, Rex doesn't understand the team's tanking. And I'm leading the charge here. Tank. I want the Patriots to be as bad as possible, because the last few years, they were stuck anywhere between 7 to 10 wins. That's the worst place you could be stuck in, because you're not having good enough draft picks to go move this team forward and try to rebuild this back up. So have Rex Ryan enjoy the Patriots' failures. Have them enjoy when they're down in the gutter and they're out. And, you know, maybe they get rid of Belichick at the end of the year. We'll still have to wait and see on that. But I want a top 5 draft pick, and I want a new quarterback in there. And then you have to develop the new quarterback properly, which they failed to do the last 2 years with Mac Jones. But come on, Rex. Like, the highlight of your career as a head coach was beating the Patriots in the playoffs. That was the highlight of your career. And you didn't even win the Super Bowl because you ran your mouth too much and you didn't show up against the Pittsburgh Steelers the following week. So let Rex Ryan sit there on his big set on ESPN and just rip the Patriots. You wish you were Bill Belichick.
This team sucks.
You suck, Rex Ryan. I actually like Rex Ryan. That's the shame of the whole thing. I think Rex Ryan is very entertaining. Here is Coach Prime, Deion Sanders. They're up 29-0. Imagine if you turn the game off at halftime, and I'm sure there's a lot of people, especially because Coach Prime was not happy with the East Coast, for the East Coast fans, with the game starting at 10 p.m. He wasn't a big fan of that. But imagine if you turn that game off and you wake up the next day and you're like, what? It's kind of similar as the week before with Miami. Maybe you turn the game off for the final minute or two, and then all you have to do is kneel down the football, and Mario Cristobal says, oh, now we're going to run the ball and then allow the other team to go 75 yards down the field. So those back-to-back weeks where things you couldn't even imagine end up happening, and Coach Prime and the Colorado Buffaloes lose to Stanford in overtime. I don't know what Shedeur Sanders was doing. You know, take the field goal there, and he had a bad interception in overtime. But here is Coach Prime on the awful loss to Stanford where they blew a 29-0 lead.
Right now, we're not built for the moment. We're not built for the moment. Some of our players aren't built for the moment where they have to make a play or they have to keep contained or they have to make a block or they have to get another yard. We're not built for the moment right now.
And we all love the Colorado story, or a lot of us love the Colorado story, and it kind of set expectations out of whack. Like before the year, if you would have told me this team had 4 or 5 wins, everyone would have signed up for that. That's what I said on this show when I was filling in. That 4 or 5 wins would be a good season for Colorado. And they're already at 4 wins. You got to think they'll get 2 more and find their way into a bowl game. But if they don't and they come up 1 short, this is the one that you're going to look back at and say, man, you should have found a way to win that game. But they're building this thing from the ground up out in Boulder. Here's Caleb Williams on his 3-interception game against Notre Dame.
I made mistakes that I usually don't make. Been in college for 3 years now. I don't think I've ever had a season or game or anything like that.
And that was the stunning part. I would have thought that USC would have lost because their defense lost in a shootout. And the defense wasn't good enough. But the quarterback just was not even close to being good enough. And he's still going to be number 1 overall pick. I still believe he's going to be a great player. But man, that was a bad performance for Caleb Williams up against USC. 33-29. Oregon was up. They have the ball. 4th-and-3 at Washington's 47. And they elected to go for it. I had no problem with the play call, and I had no problem in deciding to go for it in that spot. Dan Lanning was aggressive the entire game. I don't think you stopped there. Here is Dan Lanning on going for it in the fourth quarter.
We checked to see if we liked the look. We liked the look before we ran the play. We had a timeout if we didn't like the look. We liked the look, and we just didn't execute.
And every mistake that you could say, any part of the aggression that you didn't like, they found a way to put them in a position to overcome it. If you go back to the first half, and then right there, the kicker just has to make a field goal. No one's talking about Dan Lanning going for it on 4th-and-3 because then the game goes into overtime. And finally, this was on College Game Day before the Washington-Oregon game. I like to say with Brock Purdy, he rocks out with his Brock out instead of yesterday. Well, in college, there is another male private part, let's just say, that gets used with another player and a nickname or a play on words. Here is Desmond Howard before the game talking about Michael Penix Jr.
Every time he takes the field, he's gonna bring that big penis energy. He's gonna bring that big penis energy. He's gonna bring that big penis energy. That's right, Harry. Let's go, baby.
I've been pronouncing his name wrong.
No, I think you got it right.
So, Samter, you want to know my takeaways from that? Because the first time I said rock out with your Brock out, you thought I was going to slip up and say the other word. How close Penix is to the other word, how he didn't actually say the other word, was very impressive with how many times he said that, Samter.
That was impressive, although he was screaming it and there were fans behind him. It's possible he said it without us realizing he actually said it.
I don't know. That mic was right there. It was pretty good quality. Do you have big Penix energy, by the way?
No. No. I do not.
I'm just trying to learn a little bit more about you. I'm trying to learn about big Mike.
Me and Cam
CBS.
Newton have one thing in common.
It's a good line. You can stream the NFL on Westwood One for free, sponsored by AutoZone. All season long, you can listen to every Westwood One broadcast of the NFL live on the NFL app by asking Alexa to open Westwood One Sports or on the Odyssey app. Get in the zone, AutoZone. The free AutoZone Fix Finder service can help you find a fix for free. Get in the zone, AutoZone. Restrictions apply. Now let's go to a man that does have big Penix energy, the great Rich Ackerman. The New York Jets are 3-3. And the moment that game ended, the first thing I said was before the game, Aaron Rodgers is on the field. And Aaron Rodgers, 4 or 5 weeks removed from having surgery after the Achilles injury that happened 4 weeks into the four plays into the season, I should say. And I'm like, how is this guy standing on the field without crutches and he's actually having catch? Like, I just didn't think we would see that. And I don't know if that's like for show on the field and then he gets into the locker room and he's using crutches and he's still in a lot of pain and things like that. Like, I don't believe it's as pretty and as easy as the way that he's presenting it publicly on the field. But when you have a team that's 3-3 and Aaron Rodgers is still giving hope that he could come back, that's going to become a story now. And I don't believe Aaron Rodgers coming back this year. I'll believe it when I see it. But then yet again, I didn't think you'd see him on the field before the game having catch, you know, throwing the ball around and playing catch. So without crutches too. So it's kind of incredible how he's able to walk around that easily a few weeks after the surgery. And there's one thing to say, oh yeah, I'll be back this year. I'm not going to rule it out, blah, blah, blah. But then to kind of show you signs that maybe you're moving in that direction, it does play with your mind. So I got to just do a little check here on Samter. Because Samter, he's fugazi when it comes to being a football fan. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but he was a Jet fan his entire life. And then, what, this started, I'm assuming, right after the Rodgers injury that you gave up on the franchise?
Yeah, four plays into the season, I'm no longer a Jets fan.
And now you root for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Let's go Chiefs Kingdom, baby.
But now this team is 3-3. They've given you some hope where if you look at their three losses, all right, they got slammed by the Cowboys. They lost to the Patriots. That's a bad loss. And then you lost to Kansas City by 3 points. I can't get on the Jets for that. So they've really only had one bad loss, like one criminal loss this year. And I say that as a Patriot fan, where they should have won the game against New England. They haven't beat the Patriots like, what, 14 or 15 straight times, whatever the number is. So now at 3-3, with this defense winning a game yesterday against who I believe is the best team in the NFC, in the Philadelphia Eagles, and you also didn't have Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed, is Samter, who may not say this publicly because he's boisterous and he's now doing this whole thing where it's like, oh, I'm a Chiefs fan, and you're trying to stalk probably Travis Kelce when he's walking around with Taylor Swift this weekend in New York City. Oh, you were there?
Oh, yeah. I was following all the way to SNL.
Those were the high-pitched screams that I heard in New York City on Saturday evening? Oh, that was you? Okay. I was wondering what those
screams
were.
That's my tight end right there, baby.
But if you stop with this nonsense and this hogwash, because I know down deep you're a Jet fan, you just can't give up on your football team. Are you now starting to think the Jets are making a run to the playoffs?
As an objective non-Jet fan, I think it's possible. I mean, Zach Wilson
is Jet fan in himself.
Zach Wilson is bad, but he's just not bad enough that the defense and the running game and Garrett Wilson can
keep
win
him
a few
afloat.
Games. Can keep, like you said, they barely lost to the Chiefs. They beat the Eagles. Zach Wilson has gotten better every week to the point where he's not losing them games. He's not winning them games.
Yeah.
Because like you look at what happened last night.
You have the pick and it gets you down to the 10-yard line. If they didn't get that ball some yards off the return,
right,
they probably don't win the game.
Right, and it's not like Zach Wilson threw the winning touchdown pass. He handed the ball off to Breece Hall, who ran into the end zone. So it's not like Zach, you know, orchestrated this great drive to win the game. He did nothing to win the game for them. He made a couple decent throws. At the end of the day, the defense is great, and it's so weird how they're good in the first half and they are lights out in the second half against everybody, whether it was the Bills or the Chiefs. They seem to give up plays early, and then second half they make adjustments and no one can do anything on them. Can they make the playoffs? Possibly, but if you look at the AFC, there's like...
Which is not as strong as what we thought it was going
to
be.
No, but there's like 10 teams that are 3-3 and better, right? So like of 12 teams, 13 teams, anybody from the AFC can get knocked out.
They have a chance to make the playoffs. And here's the biggest difference. It's not really like that Zach Wilson is that much of a better quarterback from last year to this year. It's Zach Wilson is now someone that has figured out how to conduct himself in an NFL locker room. Where last year, it was the easiest question ever. He had to take blame. He had to take accountability for that loss up against the Patriots where you had the punt return at the end of the game and the Patriots won 10-3 and he failed to do that. It was the easiest question anyone's ever been asked as a quarterback. And all he had to say was, this is on me. This is on my side of the ball. And this is on me as a quarterback. And he didn't do that. And the locker room turned on him. They turned on him. Now, Rodgers was their guy. Rodgers has supported Zach Wilson. And Zach Wilson knows that you toe that line in answering questions. And you take all the accountability now. And I think that has earned him some clout or put him back in the good graces of the locker room. People realize that, hey, he made a mistake last year. Now, I don't still believe in Zach Wilson as a football player, but can you have a team believe in him more than last year and that maybe gets him a few more victories? It's certainly possible. And you look at the schedule. They just went through the toughest part of their schedule. So they have a bye week. They play the Giants. They should beat the Giants. I then think they'll lose to the Chargers. They then should beat the Raiders the week after that. Let's say then they split with Buffalo, so they lose to Buffalo this time around. Let's say they lose to Miami. But then they bounce back. Even if they split Atlanta and Houston, lose Miami again, but then down the stretch, like I'm trying to be as harsh as possible, you have Washington, Cleveland, and New England. Those are three winnable games. And if they win all those games, that puts them at six more wins. That gets them to nine wins. You're in the mix. And I know I gave them the three games, but all those other games were like, they could beat Miami one time. That's not out of the realm of possibilities. They could win both Atlanta and Houston. They could also lose both of them too. But with what that defense did yesterday, that defense just shows me they're more than just Sauce Gardner and Quinnen Williams, which is the national feeling of it. Like Bryce Huff is really damn good. Quincy Williams, Quinnen Williams' brother, is really damn good. And the more and more they're still in it, the Aaron Rodgers return talk, whether it's valid or false, is just going to grow exponentially. And there's going to be more whispers and more loud screams, maybe coming outside of Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce's apartment from Michael Samter, because he really shows his Jets love for Aaron Rodgers to maybe make a return this year and do the unthinkable.